Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Right now, we might dabble with social media politics as well with Robbie Suave, but I want to start with some other issues. He is the senior editor at Reason and author of Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. Robbie, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on WMAL.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
I saw this headline out of California where I used to make my home, which my children, I have a high school kid in school in California. So I saw this headline and I realized, well, this is a first. California is following Virginia's lead because Virginia floated this idea last week. And this is the idea of halting accelerated math programs in high school and dumbing down the math curricula across the board out of concerns with equity. Talk to me about this and what the origins are here and what the rationale is behind this.
Sure. So this is a proposal by the Education Department of the state of California that very much mirrors what Virginia is doing. It's a framework that's hundreds of pages of long, but the idea is they want to discourage different tracks for students studying math. So, you know, currently you can quickly progress through algebra, geometry, trigonometry, et cetera, so that you're taking calculus if you're gift math, so that you can calculus by the time of your senior year, and then you can study higher math in college. They don't, the Department of Education, for whatever reason, has decided this is bad and would rather everyone take the same math for as long as possible. In practice, that means dumbing math down so that it's easy enough for the less gifted students. In fact, the department kind of rejects the notion that there are gifted students anyway. They have a lot of kind of like feel-good nonsense in this report about how everyone is equally capable of excelling at math. Which is simply not true. If you know anything about kids, some of them are very good at it. Most, in fact, are not.
So let's focus on what's really a player, because the other thing that was stunning to me, Robbie, and it again mirrors what's happening in Virginia and most specifically in Fairfax County Public Schools with Thomas Jefferson High School. They rationalize this decision to remove accelerated fast tracks of math classes for gifted students for racial reasons, and again, it has to do with Asian Americans. We're seeing this in Fairfax County, too. How can they even do that? Aren't there laws against this sort of thing?
It's stunning. I mean, Asian Americans are facing so much systemic discrimination and systemic racism in our education system. I think it's morally appalling what places like Harvard and Yale do to Asian applicants, which is specifically rejecting them because they are Asian. If that's not racism, I don't understand what is. Unfortunately, our Supreme Court has allowed it. The country's Supreme Court has allowed it in very limited circumstances. That might not be true forever, but this is exactly like that. And often, you're talking about Thomas Jefferson High School. So they wanted this plan to this new admissions plan that would punish Asian students. The irony about that, so they're trying to get more diverse representation, which I think is ridiculous. I don't care if 100% of the students are Asian. What does that matter? But in any case, the biggest beneficiary of this plan is white students. So you would slightly increase Black and Hispanic enrollment and massively decrease Asian enrollment, but mostly you would just increase white enrollment, which is so funny. So funny. And these are progressive educators proposing this.
Well, and that's the key here, Robbie. I mean, there's nothing progressive about it. In fact, this is so regressive, it actually harkens back to some of the worst ideas that plagued the 20th century.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to, you know, they tried to keep Jewish people out of universities. There were quotas for Jewish people for Harvard because they didn't, you know, and they used similar language to what you hear now. Oh, we need a diverse campus. Well, if diverse means keeping people out of the campus because they have the wrong racial makeup, isn't that cruel, and isn't that just racist?
Right.
So I don't understand it. Anyway, it would be terrible in California or Virginia, wherever it's tried, but they're going to hold back people who excel at math out of this misguided notion that everyone needs to get end up in the exact same place, which I think is wrong. Just let people opt out and specialize in something else if they're better at it. Don't torture kids with math if they're bad at it. There's no point.
Well, and let's dwell on that idea for a moment here, where all the kids have to sort of end up in the same place or in the same parameters. This is all about that word equity, isn't it? We hear equity from a lot of these educators and a lot of these school board members here locally, where their main focus is equity put into practice in terms of educational policy. This is what it looks like. You start removing the gifted and talented pathways for those kids who are excelling out of equity concerns, right?
Yeah, and it just doesn't, there's no, it's not, it's, I think, wrong anyway. It's morally wrong, but it's also just not societally beneficial to hold people back so we all arrive in exactly the same place, because people, individuals are different and they specialize in different things, and that's good. That's how society functions. Some people will go on to be, who are, you know, naturally really good at math, will specialize in that and become math whizzes and become physicists and mathematicians and inventors and such. You know, other people will learn a skilled trait, which is just as important. Some people will be artists. Some people will be writers. Some people will be plumbers. It's all, you got to figure out what you're good at and do that. So the idea that we need to keep everyone at the same level studying the same thing for as long as possible just doesn't make any sense. But it is nevertheless what California educators have arrived on as the correct thing to do.
And increasingly here in Virginia as well, as we see. And I guess that sort of, to finish up this part of our conversation, Robbie, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about critical race theory as part of the curriculum, or critical race theory at least being part of the HR diversity training for the teachers in the school system, if it hasn't actually infiltrated directly into the curriculum. And the CRT and the Ibram X. Kendi anti-racism sort of paradigm, they use this term equity a lot too. Have we reached a point where they will only judge a school system or a government policy through the lens of equity if nobody is excelling, if one group not of their choosing is excelling and doing better than a group that they would prefer to excel? Is that how this is working out?
Yeah, that's exactly how it's working out. And of course, I mean, anti-racism sounds good on its surface, right? Who wants to be pro-racism? It'd be terrible. I absolutely think schools should be non-racially discriminatory. They should be equal. But what they actually mean when they use that term is that they don't like the results. They don't like that Asian students seem to do well on standardized tests, so we could abolish them, which is bad, because if you get rid of tests, how do you know which groups are not performing well? Like, even if you want to fix the problem, getting rid of your measurement for understanding the problem doesn't help you with anything.
Yeah.
So it's so self-defeating. And they're really borrowing a lot of language from kind of workplace harassment training, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Which everyone knows don't work. They don't change mind. Everyone makes fun of it because it's pointless. And there's no scientific validity to it. So a lot of these concepts don't have anything behind them. They're beloved by activists, but they're not actually really intellectually rigorous concepts.
And these are things that in both Virginia and California, let's face it, this is happening everywhere. Maryland, get ready if it hasn't already happened. This is not the kind of thing, though, that the bureaucracy can just implement. It will take elected officials are going to have to put their name and their vote on this stuff, right, so that they can be held accountable. Or is this just one of those things where the beast of the permanent bureaucracy within education just sort of takes over and they do their thing?
There's a lot that state education officials can do without ever getting to the point of voters weighing in. You know, there's so many bad calls by school boards and superintendents and officials within the system that is just, you know, divorced from what any parent would want.
Yeah.
Parents need to be vocal. They need to complain. You know, you can stop these kinds of things. I think, like, for instance, San Francisco ended its plan to rename all the schools after it got just it took a while. You had to get a torrent of national criticism. Finally, they said, okay, we get it. This is a dumb idea. So you have to be very vocal and keep hitting them, and then you can wade them off of it.
We're speaking with Robbie Suave. He's the senior editor at Reason, and his book is Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. Listen, I've got Mark Meckler coming up, who runs things at Parler there, and he's going to have strong things to say about social media companies and decisions to silence people. I have a hunch Senator Ted Cruz later in the program might have some strong opinions about that too, if his comments in Senate committees are any indication. So from your perspective, from a pretty strong libertarian perspective, what's your take on what happened yesterday with Facebook and this sort of, I don't know, star chamber that gets to make decisions for the company's behalf on whose voice is allowed to be heard?
Yeah, it's an interesting decision. It got a lot of criticism from the right, even though the decision did say that Facebook had imposed an improper penalty on former President Trump. Basically, Facebook can either, according to Facebook's own policies, they will permanently, they will get rid of people's accounts, or they will suspend them and then let them come back after a certain amount of time. By indefinitely suspending Donald Trump, they did something in effect that they've never done before. So this decision says Facebook should revisit that. And my guess is they might very well decide within the next 6 months to let Trump back on. Obviously, I have a lot of complaints. I share a lot of the same criticisms that Senator Cruz and others have of individual content moderation decisions on Facebook, et cetera. I'm a little less persuaded. In fact, I'm quite unpersuaded that many of the solutions proposed would fix that problem. And I know, by the way, the left, the Democrats, nobody wants to break up Facebook more aggressively than Elizabeth Warren does. I think because she knows that there's actually a lot of conservative content on Facebook. So probably if Elizabeth Warren thinks it's a good idea, it's not actually a good idea for conservatives to support. And I wish there was more recognition of that.
So from the libertarian, because I hear my libertarian friends when I complain about this, and I'm not the first one running for the, you know, I've never seen a problem that the federal government and their regulations could solve. Okay, that's just my perspective. So I get it, and it's interesting to me that many conservatives do feel that there needs to be some sort of intervention here, even in the terms of regulation or breaking up Facebook. It sure feels like a monopoly. So from your perspective, from the libertarian perspective, I hear from you guys a lot, well, if you don't like it, just build your own Facebook. That's not really realistic here, is it? That's not a fair response.
Yeah, no, it's not realistic. And there's a lot of coordination between the companies, including, for instance, what they did to Parler. But there's a lot of like, well, could we make them more subject to liability or something like that? I think it's even less likely a rival would come along if you went forward with some of the reforms that have been discussed, for instance, changing Section 230 is one of them. Yeah. There's a lot of web properties, much smaller companies that also rely on 230 protection. So at the very least, you'd have to do it where, well, this only applies to extremely big companies, but then it would still apply to Twitter, which is Facebook's rival. So I know Twitter doesn't want this change because they say, well, then we couldn't compete with Facebook. So this is what happens in a lot of other varieties. You know, regulation ends up benefiting the big guy. Like Walmart loves minimum wage because it puts all the mom and pop stores out of business.
Yeah.
Like this has happened so many other times in so many other fields. I just want to be very cautious that we don't further entrench Facebook's power, because who is best prepared to lobby Congress to get the exact kind of thing that makes them better off? Well, of course, it's Facebook.
Yeah. Well, and the other complication, though, here is that it goes well beyond speech because or political speech, because they're also fundraising off of this. You know, politicians can use Facebook and use their social media platform and footprint to raise money and to get the word out, to direct people to fundraising engines. By keeping Donald Trump out for whatever reasons, legitimate or illegitimate, they are tipping the scales in one direction. If Donald Trump decides he wants to run for office in 2024, he now doesn't have access to that fundraising capability. That seems like a problem.
I mean, it is. Maybe it is. But right, his Hillary Clinton raised more money than Trump did, and it didn't matter. I mean, Trump could call a press. He could talk all day on Fox if he wanted to. There's so many avenues for him to speak. Now, I'm not saying I agree with the decision to keep him off Facebook. I think ultimately they probably should let him back on. But there's just so many other ways. I tend to think we overvalue social media, or we think it's more important than it is because it's the newest thing and it's cool and fancy and different. But political candidates can get a lot of attention on television, on the radio. I mean, there's all other varieties of other new media too, right? There's podcasts. There's so much stuff. It seems like any one thing might be less important than people are making out to be. Like, I don't agree that Facebook swung the election toward Trump in 2016 because there was too many Russian bots, right? I think that's dumb. But I similarly don't think them you know, tipping their thumb on the scales in 2020 swung the election the other way. It's just one factor out of about a billion.
All right, Rabbi Swaby, we'll leave it there. I always consider your approach to this to be reasoned, if I can say that. And even when I don't agree, you always have a good argument. He's senior editor at Reason.com and author of Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. And I'll let Ted Cruz know what you had to say. We'll see how he responds. Thanks,
Thank
Robbie.
Thank you. Take care.